Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please do not call unless we ask for callers, because we have with us a very, very special guest tonight, one of my very good friends, a person who is out on the front lines of this battle trying to educate the American people. And I don't know anybody who does a better job of that than Joyce Riley of the Power Hour. Joyce, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you. You're so kind, Dr. Stan.
Well, we're sort of joined together, you know, in this common effort to try to make people understand that America is under attack. Our boys are under attack overseas, but not necessarily from the terrorists. Well, certainly the terrorists are creating a great deal of havoc and damage to our soldiers over there. But it has been reported by our government that about a third of the young men, within 3 months of the time they return home, are developing all sorts of, they call it mental problems, or, they've got a lot of complaints and they don't really know what they are, and is it post-traumatic stress, or is it something else that they're covering up for us? But a third of the young people coming back, these otherwise healthy young people, are ill within 3 months. What's really going on, Joyce?
Well, I can tell you right now that our military is very sick. I just was sitting here before the program going through some emails that I got saying, please help, please help. And they were from returning troops from Iraq. The status of our military that are serving in Iraq right now, I think we're going to be seeing much sicker people than we ever saw in the previous Gulf War, the reason being that they've been over there for a much longer period of time. The exposure to depleted uranium is so much worse, so much more intense than what we had in the first Gulf War, that I think we're going to see people, as we are right now, that literally die within 1 or 2 months from returning home. I just got a note from a troop who said, I am deathly ill right now and can't find any help. When I go to the VA, they tell me there's nothing wrong with me. And I mean, I could read the letter and it just breaks your heart, but you get the idea. I don't need to go through these letters, but I'm getting them, and they are being turned away from the VA other than being given the standard psychotropic drugs to take, and they're going to end up just dying off. I'm afraid that we are waiting for this army to die now.
Well, I think it's so frightening to realize that, according to the VA's own admission, 30% of the young men within 3 months of returning begin developing these symptoms, of which, of course, they will try to ascribe to psychological, but that's what they did with the Gulf War illness, and they simply lied to the American people. We do have the report from September of 2004 that was put out by from the Veterans Administration that admits almost half of the people, by the time that they put out this report for the first Gulf War, almost half of them are ill, seriously ill. But you're not going to read that report in the regular newspaper. Well, go ahead, Joyce. Pick the story up.
If I were to tell you what I know is going on right now, it would be so depressing, especially for the parents that have troops over there. But I think what we need to concentrate on is the fact that they need to get help as soon as they get home. They need to be listened to. They need to be trusted. There is something wrong.
All right. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Joyce Riley. And what we're really talking about is the depleted uranium that is being used over there that is having such a devastating effect on our present troops and, of course, the troops from the first Gulf War. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. All right, Joyce, pick the story up from there.
Okay, the depleted uranium, which we know is being used in Iraq right now, let me just give you a rundown of the munitions that are consistent with the use of depleted uranium, or significant levels of depleted uranium. First of all, by telling you that depleted uranium is twice as dense as lead, it is used because it breaks things and it kills people. And it breaks things and kills people really well. And that's why the Department of Defense has chosen to use this. Now, they could use something called tungsten, or there's a website called Liquid Metal that calls attention to other things that can be used, but instead of doing that, they've chosen to use depleted uranium, which in fact has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. It is radioactive. It is not depleted. That is a public relations a slant to this to make you think that it is okay. It comes from the nuclear power industry, and they give it basically free to the Department of Defense. They mold it into these weapons. Now, the weapons that have depleted uranium in them are all the way from the 7.62 millimeter shell, 50 caliber shell, the 20 millimeter shell, 25 millimeter shell, 30 millimeter shell, the 105 millimeter shell in the Bradley fighting vehicle, and the 120 millimeter shell from the M1A1 main battle tank, which has about 4,500 grams of depleted uranium in it. Then you go up to the cruise missiles, which have an unknown quantity of depleted uranium, and the bunker buster bombs, also with unknown quantity, those 5,000-pound bombs.
Well, now, don't the 50-caliber machine gun bullets, aren't they depleted uranium, too?
Correct. 50-caliber, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the mass of depleted uranium is, though, in the 50-cal. But the problem is that this, as it leaves the muzzle of the weapon, it catches on fire. It's pyrophoric. It then sheds the particles all over wherever it goes from the place it is launched to the place that it lands. Be that a tank or a building or a person or a whatever it enters, it is going to shed these particles. These particles are particulate matter, about 0.2 micron and less, and the size of a bacteria or virus. It is radiation. It is a weapon of mass destruction, and it is a war crime to use this because it does not distinguish, of course, between civilian and military populations. So we now have this item that is dropping these little particulate matter all the way from the firing of it until the time that it implodes, and it goes through a tank like butter, which is why it is used. Now, depleted uranium, though, as it is breathed in or eaten by either the animals or the people, be that the children that are around the area or the military people or the animals.
Well, that's off right there, Joy. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Joyce Riley, and we're talking about depleted uranium. Now, the truth of the matter is, this is not depleted uranium. It is solid uranium-238 with a little bit of 235 and a little bit of 234 in there, but it is solid uranium. When fired, it actually burns and creates something called uranium oxide. It is a dust, but it is inhaled, and it gets into your lung, and it's so fine and particulate that it gets into your bloodstream and gets into your bone. It disseminates throughout your body. It has been outlawed by countries throughout the world because it is so lethal, and yet, of course, we use it not only on the enemy, but, of course, we contaminate our own troops with this. And the great tragedy is the average American has never read the reports that have come out from other countries that condemn the use of this radioactive material, certainly radioactive with a long-term health effects. They know it has, but it would appear that the people in Washington, D.C. really don't care about the health of our troops because, as Joyce had said so well, the purpose of the Army is to break things and kill people. And uranium bullets, uranium shells do this better than anything else. And the ultimate goal in war is to kill and be victorious, irrespective of whether it's going to destroy the health of your own soldiers. So pick the story up there, Joyce.
Well, as we said, depleted uranium is basically poisoning the people that are breathing it in or eating the food in Iraq right now. And it is because of the 18-month stays there. You know, you can just it's just being magnified, the amount of damage to these people. I decided I want to tell you this story, or this letter I just got. Now, this is a letter that a woman is writing to George Norrie on the Coast to Coast show because she first heard about depleted uranium when her granddaughter was in Iraq because of my being on the show. So she wrote to George, and she said, we are in the midst of trying to get help for our granddaughter, Katie, who is in the military in Iraq. She had military friends that have died without explanation. No one would talk about the cause or the cure. This is just of recent. She just returned from Iraq. Katie was sent home ill, but now she is very, very ill. I believe she has radiation poisoning. She was due to go back to Iraq, but now they have discharged her. The VA hospitals check her out more than have checked her out more than once. She's lost 30 pounds. She is only on fluids as she cannot digest any food. It is hard to keep down fluids, and she vomits continually, has continual nausea, is having diarrhea and bleeding problems, and the VA doctors say there's nothing wrong with her. They have given her psychotropic drugs. We are searching for ways to help her to detoxify and rebuild her health. I believe it will take a miracle. Let it not be in vain for her friends to have died where she was in Iraq. These young men died of continual diarrhea and nausea. No explanation. Her job was driving a Humvee. The military came in with bulldozers and scraped up all the soil where they were located and took it off. Then they came in with new soil, but they would not tell them why they had taken the old soil away. Makes one wonder if it is radiation. Please get and keep Joyce Riley on the air, and again, get this message out. Depleted uranium is killing our kids. There won't be another healthy generation if this continues. Our future will be destroyed. People have got to know what is happening. They all need the truth. We need your show. We need the information. Because you had Joyce on the show, and I heard about it some months back, that information may be the reason that we are able to get enough help to save this young 20-year-old girl. And by the way, it is her birthday today. I tried to get my first husband's records after he died after the military. He was called in from the National Guard in Korea from Utah. He volunteered. He watched the blast in the Nevada desert. They have no records of his being there, in fact, and I never could get his records. I gave up. Now it is happening again. Thanks for listening. I will not give up this time.
Well, now, of course, did George Norrie send you a copy of that, or did she send you a copy?
The mother sent me a copy of that. Or the grandmother sent me a copy of that.
And I think that people have to understand what happens. These people get skin rashes. They get terrible diarrhea and bowel problems. They can't think clearly. They get this chronic fatigue. They get intense diarrhea. They certainly get this fatigue. They get the joint pain. Their whole system is upset. These are the symptoms that are actually listed by the Veterans Administration. The report that we got, if any of you would like to see the page that we from that report, where they talk about literally half of the people, 62% of the British component, 65% of one component from New England. I think there was 50% of one group, two groups from Kansas, one with 35% and the other was 45%. Of these symptoms, these are the veterans who came back from the first Gulf War. And you're not hearing about it out there, because they don't want you to, but if you'd like the page from the government report, we'd be glad to send it to you. And I'm sure that there's so much information that's available from Joyce Riley, and she's put together a wonderful DVD. And I recommend it to you. I've seen it, and it has interviews with people. And there is so much information available on the Internet, if you'll just look at it. Go to the Royal Institute of International Affairs and see what this British group has come up with. They're frightened to death about what's happening, and because of the degree of control over the media in America, the average American does not understand that the battle is not necessarily against the Islamic terrorists in Iraq. It's against our own men.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, this letter sort of signifies what these troops are saying, all of them. You know, and it's both from Afghanistan and from Iraq, because it was used in Bosnia, it was used in Yugoslavia, it was used in Iraq and Afghanistan. But the neurological problems that they are having, ophthalmological problems, urological problems, dermatology problems, I mean, cardiology, you can go right down the systems of the body, the organ systems of the body, and they're all affected. All of them are affected. Radiation kills everything and starts destroying everything in the body. Now, for people that think that this is not known, and gee, we need to tell Congress about this, and Joyce, why haven't you talked to the people in Congress? They know full well everything I'm telling here. They know this. This is not a secret. What is a secret is that they're not going to tell the American public, because they can't. They cannot basically let them know this. Now, the Christian Science Monitor did a study in Iraq, and the date on this study, well, I'm not going to tell you the date on this study. I'm going to tell you, first of all, that they measured the radiation in four areas of Baghdad. And the reporter that did this, and I have to give him a lot of credit, Scott Peterson of the Christian Science Monitor, went over there, measured these areas. They gathered around as a Geiger counter carried by a visiting reporter just started zinging when it went to near a DU bullet fragment no bigger than a pencil eraser, a pencil eraser. And that little thing, that little bullet fragment, registered nearly 1,000 times the normal background radiation level on the digital readout. So they went to four sites in the city. Each one of them was doing the very same thing. This is incredible when you consider that that is all over the desert over there. The children are being exposed to it. They go up to those pieces and collect them as souvenirs. This is the one area in Baghdad had one site that had 1,300 times.
Mm-hmm. The normal background reaction.
Yeah, it's incredible, but this is going on all the time over there.
Well, when was this report published? Are you going to tell us that?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
15 May of 2003.
Okay.
Now, that was when they were just starting with the mother of all battles, remember? They were just starting then. Think what it must be now after they've been doing it for 2 years over there. It's just, it's beyond belief to me that it could be so significant. So what we're doing right now is killing that part of the world, killing the next seven generations, and what we're doing is going to be killing ourselves too, because this blows all across the world. This doesn't just stay over there. So when we did Beyond Treason, we did, as you probably saw, the CD-ROM that goes along with it. And the documents that are on there are there for a reason.
Now, basically, this is a DVD that they put together, and there are two of them. There's one, the story with the interviews on it, and then the other is the documentation, and from many, many sources. What sort of sources is that documentation from?
Well, one of them is a classified report on Agent Orange. It was never supposed to see the light of day from Admiral Zumwalt.
And what they're doing is they lied to the American people and to our servicemen about Agent Orange that was used in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at the 308, I believe it's called, missing link files, you will actually see the memos from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Colin Powell, regarding the use of chemical and biological weapons or the availability of them in Iraq at the time. So, And you know, Dr. Stan, I wanted to share this with you because what we have found out is how they keep this game going, this fraud going, is that, as you recall, if you don't mind me going over this just a second, for the people that may not be familiar with this, in 1985 through 1989, we sold the weapons to Iraq that were illegal, basically.
No, those were chemical and biological weapons. We sold it to them, and then we gave them the money to buy it from them. So it really was sort of a nice situation. We gave them $5 billion. Between 5 and 10 million, and then they used that to buy the chemical and biological weapons that we were so upset that they had.
That's right, and we transferred them through the Banco Nacional de Lavoro of Atlanta, Georgia, or the money from the Commercial Credit Corporation, and basically gave Saddam Hussein the money. We wanted to make this man our friend. Now, Iran was going up against Iraq. We didn't know who was going to win, so we armed both of them. Donald Rumsfeld went to Iraq in 1983, in December of 83. On December 18th, met with Saddam Hussein, and he was called and touted the Reagan envoy from the Reagan administration, when in reality he was the CEO of G.D. Searle Pharmaceutical Company. So what we have is the illegal sale of the weapons. And then the story gets much worse after that.
Okay, well, we're going to have to take a quick break. But if any of you would doubt what Joyce is saying about how we financed Saddam Hussein and then sold him these terrible weapons of mass destruction that we're so concerned that he had, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the article, When an Ally Becomes an Enemy, Washington Post article, and it will confirm we were giving him massive amounts of money. Why would we give massive amounts of money to a wicked man who would kill so many of his own people? Well, I guess this evening is Joyce Riley. Pick the story up from there, Joyce.
Well, when we sold the weapons to him in 1985 through 1989, we sold him biological agents such as Clostridium botulinum, anthrax, West Nile fever virus, from the American Type Culture Collection. And we cover all this on the Beyond Treason website. And you can go to beyondtreason.com and see the information how, if you are a military person, you can get this free at no charge. If you've been in the military in the past, or if you are now serving in the military, it is no charge to you. Just go to beyondtreason.com. But the American Type Culture Collection has been selling biologicals to the U.S. government since 1925. Sold them to Iraq, made Iraq our friend, and then in 1990 and 91 time frame, everybody knows what happened in the build-up to the war, and in 1990, the Tri-Service Vaccine Task Force decides to create a vaccine, the West Nile Fever vaccine, against West Nile Fever virus. Now remember, we didn't have a problem with West Nile Fever virus in this country. It was not even known during that time, for the most part. So here we create the problem by selling it to Iraq, and then we say, oh my goodness, we must have a vaccine against it. Well, no kidding. You created it, you sold it to Iraq. And by the way, these weapons were not for research purposes. They were not attenuated. They were capable or weakened. They were capable of reproduction. So they were for offensive weapon use, not for research purposes. So we sell them to Iraq, and then we decide we've got to make some vaccines against it. Enter the proprietary pharmaceutical companies at this point, who get to benefit from this, and do the testings during the first Gulf War. And we don't know how many vaccines were tested other than the anthrax or the botulinum. We know there was something called squalene that was added to the vaccines, which is an artificial adjuvant that makes it more powerful, but we just don't know how many vaccines were actually used. Now, when you look at the CD-ROM on the with the documentary of Beyond Treason, you will actually see there the previously classified minutes from the Tri-Service Vaccine Task Force minutes meeting or meeting, and then the government, in its brilliance, decided that they would give our troops, of course, the chemical protection to go in and fight this war that they knew they were going to need because they had already sold the chemical and biological weapons in the first place. So they work with Isratex, which is a company from Raydale, West Virginia, and they purchase 800,000 defective chemical suits.
Defective chemical suits, you mean they really weren't much of any good.
They were zero good.
But, of course, the company that made the suits made an awful lot of money.
They made an awful lot of money, and then when it was brought to their attention that these suits were no good, and you know the government checks the quality control of everything, but nobody ever said anything until about 2 years after the war. Then when it was found that they were really defective, all of a sudden they decided to go after Isratex, who had already packed their bags and left to go back out of the United States. Nobody was ever held accountable for that. But we now know that 800,000 chemical suits were defective. The GAO report, the Government Accounting Office report, has now confirmed that. And the masks were defective also.
Oh, shucks, just how could that possibly have happened? Well, I guess it was just incompetence, but never will happen again, of course.
Well, they all have religious experiences after all of these, you know, called lessons learned. Well, as a result of that, then, they send the troops over there to fight this war, and I was stationed at Kelly Air Force Base at the time. Now, the mission of my unit...
Hold that thought, Joyce. We're going to have to bring our other stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Joyce Riley, and we're talking about what happened as far as Iraq was concerned. We're talking really about the first Gulf War, and Joyce is saying that the government had created an experimental vaccine. Was that? Do you think that was the vaccine that they gave our troops over there, the West Nile vaccine, experimental West Nile? Well, we always thought that was an anthrax experimental vaccine. Do we know what the experimental vaccine was that they gave to hundreds, at least thousands of our troops without their knowledge or consent?
Well, let me say that they have already admitted to the anthrax, which was experimental. They have admitted to the botulinum, which was experimental. I don't know what else was given, but the very fact that they were creating it and they had created the problem and then created the solution, I'm sure they did use it. I know there were several trials going on during that time. Several people have told me about, such as one unit that was called into a building. They were told to go over to a special building. They went in, and there were basically armed guards at the door. They went inside. They were told to sign a form that said that they agreed to take this vaccine, that they were doing it with total informed consent, and they wanted this vaccine, this experimental vaccine. They had no idea what it was. They wouldn't tell them anything about it. But they said, you will sign this and you will take this vaccine. And they said that they were all sick. There were only about 12 of them in this particular unit, but they were all sick after that.
And I think what we have to understand is that they use our boys to experiment on. You go in the military, they're going to experiment on you. And if he kills you, well, that's the way it is. People die in wartime, but this is not necessarily wartime. These people are being used as guinea pigs because, of course, they can't do it on civilians, so they do it on a military. And when you go in the military, you lose all of your rights. And there's nobody to come back to. There's nobody to sue. And, of course, the people who are producing the vaccine, if it works, fine. And if it doesn't, well, you're simply written off. And I hate to think that could happen. But when we realize we have evil and wicked people working at the highest echelons of our government and our Defense Department, why, it all becomes very logical. You understand that there are a lot of good people. A lot of people have tried to get the information out. There was a wonderful book, I know you talk about it in your DVD, called Vaccine A. We carry the book. We have a four-tape set on Vaccine A, and it was really going into an experimental vaccine that was given to our boys over there in the Gulf before the Gulf War started. We just don't know what it was. Maybe it was anthrax. Maybe it was something else. Maybe it was a lot of different things. But they used our soldiers as guinea pigs. And half of them are ill today.
And, you know, I don't know that we will ever know all the things that were used during this period of time. But, however, after this, when people began to get sick after the war, and they were coming back, well, they had to start getting them out of the military right away. And, by the way, I wanted to go back to Kelly Air Force Base, where I said that our mission was to go in, do the hot onloads, which means that you land a C-130, basically without a runway, in an area near a forward hospital, like a MASH Army hospital. And we should have been the ones that were trained most for biologicals and chemicals, and we were not. We were not even told that the U.S. government had set us up, basically set us up by selling these weapons to Iraq and then sending us in as basically fodder to go in and have to take care of these people. And the front area would be, the front line would be the primary place that you would need to have this knowledge. Well, we became ill, many of us, and that's another whole story. It's not important right now, but a lot of neurological problems, a lot of systemic problems occurred. And the Department of Defense immediately said, there's nothing wrong, it must be a mental problem. Now, you and I both know that the Department of Defense knew full well what had happened over there. They knew there were biologicals, they knew there were chemicals, depleted uranium, oil well fires, and the experimental vaccines. So had they been concerned about the troops and really wanted to, quote-unquote, support the troops, they would have immediately done the diagnostic workup to find out what it was that they were affected with and start treating that. But instead, they started stonewalling it. Now, I have seen now, and I have figured this through from the Vietnam War to the first Gulf War, now the second Gulf War, atomic veterans, how they've handled this. What happens is the Department of Defense needs to be able to categorically deny this, but they can't do it without research. So they farm out research to their favorite people who are going to give them the answers that they want. As an example, in the first Gulf War, they utilized the Institute of Medicine. So they get the big contracts to go to the IOM. The IOM comes back and says, wow, we can't figure out, there's not enough evidence, therefore we can't find out what's wrong with the troops. The DOD then says, see, there's no evidence. We tried to get the research and it didn't work. And looks like you're up against a break, but I'll tell you what, who handled the depleted uranium denial.
Who planted the, who handled the depleted uranium denial?
Are you ready? The Rand Corporation.
There's the Rand Corporation. It's one of these think tanks that's funded by the invisible government, the occult hierarchy that rules the world. And that, they've been around for a long time, undermining the very fabric of our society. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Joyce Riley, and she's just saying, of course, that the RAND Corporation had been asked to do the studies on depleted uranium. If you go back and you read the Dan Smoot book, it came out in the early 1960s, 61, as I remember, going into who really runs America from behind the scenes. And, of course, one of the major organizations is the RAND Corporation, worked closely with the CFR the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, and all the usual suspects undermining the basic fabric of our society. So pick up the story there, Joyce.
So each time there is a major research group that is picked to give them the answers that they want. So now the Department of Defense can make their official denial, and then the Veterans Administration cannot treat for anything that does not exist. So therefore, back with the atomic veterans, since they never did admit to the atomic veterans being sick or perhaps causation directly related to their exposure to radiation or having to stand those 385,000 people that were forced to stand and watch the bomb go off, then they have the deniability that they need. The Veterans Administration cannot treat, and as you would know, the physicians cannot treat for anything that does not exist.
These were veterans, these were soldiers at the time, or government employees, who were forced to stand at various distances from where they detonated atomic explosions, and they really wanted to see how many of them would die as a result, how many of them would be chronically ill. It was a wonderful scientific experiment, all done in the name of science, but not done with basically informed consent. It was a total violation of the precepts that were laid down at Nuremberg, because this is the sort of thing the Nazis had done on the helpless prisoners. But these were not helpless prisoners. These were American servicemen.
And it made it very good, very easy for them to say, okay, out of 100 men, you can expect to have 30 die within 5 years, 40 die within 7 years. You know, I mean, it would be great. You can then say, and 60 people will get leukemia. You set up your scenario and then prove what happened, as if they were some kind of animal there, which I wouldn't even do that to an animal. I could never even conceive of doing that to an animal. But that's what they did. So then the Veterans Administration gets involved in this whole thing and says, well, there's nothing wrong with you, therefore we can't compensate for a disease that does not exist. So when troops are very honest about this, they come back, they're sick, they need help, they need compensation, they'll go to the Veterans Administration and put on their form, well, I was affected by an atomic blast.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Joyce Riley, and we're talking about some of the grotesque experiments that have been done on Americans here in this country, and nobody has ever been held responsible. She's talking about the atomic blasts and how, if you don't know about that, we have a report. We call it the Rockefeller Committee Report, came out of the Veterans Administration in 94. Tells you about all these bizarre and terrible experiments that were done on Americans without their knowledge and consent, in violation of all precepts of humanity and in violation of the rules that were laid down at Nuremberg. This is exactly what the Nazis did on the helpless prisoners in the concentration camps, what the Japanese did, on the helpless American prisoners, in Manchuria during the Second World War. And this is just what our Department of Defense did on American servicemen without their knowledge or consent. And many of them became sick, and many of them died. And yet the government to this day denies most of what you're hearing. Now, they will admit it now, but, gee, it's too late because most of them are old or decrepit or have died by now. Pick up the story there.
Well, the Veterans Administration is complicit in all of this. They have to be. And Principe, the guy who headed the Veterans Administration, was the latest. Now, he is not the present director of the Veterans Administration. He was the previous one. And for anybody to have had any knowledge about what was going on with these troops, it was him from the first Gulf War, because he headed a business that evaluated and assessed the troops, did the physical assessment of these troops. So if there's anybody that knew what was wrong with them, it was Mr. Principe, who then was given the Cadillac job of heading up the Veterans Administration, and should never have been allowed to use deniability at that point. However, the Veterans Administration then says, well, hey, soldier, too bad. We cannot give you compensation for being an atomic veteran because, hey, there was no problem from standing there and watching that bomb go off. Or, hey, troop, you can't use Agent Orange as a claim against the Veterans Administration because we don't have any evidence that Agent Orange was bad. Now, that's how they've done it all of these years. So they've protected themselves by having, quote-unquote, peer-reviewed research that says, gee, there's no problem, we can't figure it out. Now, the U.S. government has spent I don't know how many millions of dollars now. I'd say, and this is just a guess, I knew it was at $325 million at one point, but I think it's closer to around $600 or $700 million now in saying and coming up with the same conclusion, gee, we just can't figure it out. There's not enough evidence.
You're speaking really about the Gulf War illness that they've done all these studies, and they've had all these committee meetings, and they've done all the research. And I've talked to Dr. Garth Nicholson, who was very involved in this, and he said that when the Veterans Administration ran programs, they set them up so that they would fail. In other words, they simply, figures don't lie, but liars figure, and you alter the precepts of a scientific experiment so it will not show anything. And if you know how to do it, why, you can prove about anything through science. Science is supposed to be a search for the truth. These people aren't interested in the truth. They know what the truth is. They don't want the American people to know the truth.
That's correct. And they've been able to hide it that way. Now, what we know from the first Gulf War, and I know I keep jumping around from war to war and disease to disease, because basically what they do is they wait for an army to die. If we look at the first Gulf War, we see that there were 697,000 troops that served. What we know is that 225,000 of those people have now been classified as permanently disabled.
275,000.
225,000.
225,000, okay.
Out of a war, out of a 100-hour war in which 148 people died, and half of those were by friendly fire. So 70-some people died in a war, and now we have 225,000 permanently disabled. Now, somebody ought to start asking the question.
But, Joyce, the thing is that there may be 225,000 that have been declared disabled, but there are about 300,000 waiting for disability hearings. In other words, there are a lot of them are still applying for disability, but they just haven't been able to get around to evaluating them. So there's probably a lot more than the 225 who are really ill.
Oh, there's a whole lot more than that. There's at least another 225,000 that were turned down for compensation because they made the mistake of putting Gulf War illness on their claim. You see, if you put Gulf War illness on your claim, hey, that doesn't exist. So therefore, they have deniability. They turn down those troops. Then they have to go back, regroup, and if they have the energy to do another appeal or another claim, which all of this now, to do two claims and then their appeal takes about at least 7 years. And, of course, any Vietnam veteran can tell you how they've been waiting for, 20, 30 years to get their claims approved. So this is a scam. This is a literal scam on the veteran. And we're just now sort of figuring it out, putting it all together, because nobody ever wanted to believe that they were doing this to us, the veterans. So they keep this fraud going because what they do is they start a campaign of support the troops where everybody goes and purchases a yellow magnetic plastic ribbon to put on the rear of their car that says support the troops. Now, that's supposed to be supporting the troops. Or we give another memorial to them to keep them happy. Or we name another bridge after them or another highway after them. Now, this is the whole technique, is honor the dead. They don't take care of the sick. They honor the dead. Let's put up a big Vietnam memorial wall. Now, I'm not against that at all. I cry there like everybody else when I go there. But I believe that everybody on that wall would rather that their peers be taken care of now than to have their name on a wall. I really do believe that. So, and I was in West Virginia going to Pastor Butch Paw's seminar, and I came across a bridge, Dr. Stan, I could not believe. We were driving along this beautiful highway, and here is a bridge in the middle of nowhere, Virginia, West Virginia, as beautiful as it is, and it says, the Military Nurses Memorial Bridge. And I'll tell you, all that Gulf War illness I suffered sure was a whole lot better after I saw that bridge. You know, that's the sad part of all of this, is they've made the American public think that they really care because they name a bridge after them or a highway after them.
Well, Joyce, let's tell our listeners about the DVD you've got, because I think it's a very, very powerful presentation of what this is about. There's interviews with Major Rocky, who we've interviewed many times. It is one of the most powerful videos I've ever seen. And I want to congratulate you, and I think your assistant or your associate, for putting together the story of the Gulf War illness. And it involves depleted uranium, it involves the experimental vaccines, it probably involves exposure to other chemicals, which the government insisted no chemicals were there. Our troops didn't come in contact with any of it. You can believe us. Well, maybe 5,000 came in contact with chemicals. Well, maybe 10,000, maybe 50,000, maybe 100,000. But you can trust us. We would never lie to you. And I would like to suggest everything is a lie. I mean, they lied about the Philip Tillman. You remember, he was the football player who gave up a $3 million contract to go fight for his country. And they lied about the way he died. He died from friendly fire. But of course, they had to make him out a hero fighting to the ruthless enemy. And the same thing with Jessica Lynch. You know, she was there fighting. She didn't even fire a gun. It was all a lie. It is all a matter of perception. What can you get the Americans to believe? But what can you get them to believe about the Gulf War illness, about depleted uranium, about these other things? Joyce has put together the most wonderful DVD. It's not a nice DVD, but if you value your freedom, you value your family, you value what we have in this country, you're going to want to find out, because the only explanation for this is most of what you are seeing and hearing is a lie. And if we can't get the truth through regular channels, then we have to find alternative means of doing it. And why don't you talk a little bit about your DVD? Because the hour is going to fly by, and you're not going to have a chance to talk about it.
Well, thank you. Let me just say that the DVD, in and of itself, is probably the most startling thing that most people have seen with respect to the military. I've had a lot of people who are very knowledgeable about what's going on in this world, and they had no concept that this kind of, that the extent to which the experiments have been ongoing in the military. We have not had one military troop that's given us a negative comment about it. In fact, we haven't had any negative comments, period, which is very unusual. The DVD comes with a CD-ROM. The CD-ROM supports it in the documents, and there's about half the size of an encyclopedia worth of documents there that will show you and support it, along with the Groves Memorandum of 1943, in which you can link causation to radiation poisoning, to depleted uranium.
Now, for our listeners, the Groves Memorandum, General Groves was in charge of the Manhattan Project. And when, of course, they were creating uranium for the first atom bombs, what were they going to do with all the uranium that they couldn't use? They could only use 235, and most uranium is 238. What were they going to do with all this 238? Why, we won't call it uranium, which is what it is. We'll call it depleted uranium. And by the use of verbiage and by use of words, they can conceal the truth. So pick up the story there.
And so 1943 is the date that he wrote this memorandum showing, it's four pages of what the cause, or what they could do with this this dust. And they even say in there, it doesn't take very much of this to kill people. This is a great thing to use. I mean, you're very obvious about it. So we place these documents there because, you know, we have been having to defend ourselves and prove that we are sick for so long. Well, we're not doing it anymore. The documentation is here, and anybody can see it, and I would encourage anybody who has a child that is joining the military, please make them watch this. At least they will have some idea of what's going on, and if they decide to join the military after seeing this, then so be it. That is their choice. However, I am not trying to stop people from joining. I simply want you to know what will take place, what can take place, because of an executive order 13139 signed by Clinton. And yes, this doesn't have anything to do with the party that one is in. It has everything to do with the fact that this has been an ongoing experiment for the past 50 years. There is an executive order 13139 that says that anybody in the military can be experimented upon without their consent. Now, I encourage people to get this documentary and the DVD along with it. It's only $20 plus $5 shipping and handling, and you can call 877-GULF-VET, 877-GULF-VET. Or you can, if you're a military person or prior military or in the service now, call, fax us and fax just some kind of proof of service, VFW membership card or American Legion, I don't care what it is, and let us know that you're in the service, and we will send it to you at no charge. And I have to tell you, sir, we are getting out hundreds and thousands of these now from people that are hungry for information. And you know it's so sad when they write back and say, well, not only was that experiment done, but let me tell you about another one. And we're learning about more and more that I had no knowledge of. So we're getting a lot of new information for another DVD that will hopefully eventually be done on a lot of experiments that most people are not aware of. But you know what? It's amazing, Dr. Stan, when people start coming forward and have the documentation or the after-action reports to support this, it is amazing how much good we're going to be able to do by exposing what has taken place in the past. Now, you know, the example of a drug that was used, BZ, that was an aerosolized hallucinogenic drug. Now, you have had the Senate Report 103-97 on your program, the Rockefeller Report, which a lot of people have obtained from you. But prior to that time, prior to reading that Rockefeller Report, were you aware of the drug BZ?
Never heard of it.
And isn't that amazing that they could have aerosolized a drug and sprayed it over our troops in Vietnam? And to such a massive extent, and nobody knew anything about it.
But you see, they conceal everything, and since they control the media, they effectively control what the American people think.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so now we're down to I believe that there are some things going on in Iraq right now that are going to change. For instance, this DVD is making its way to Iraq. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people that are afraid to be found with it, but they're starting to spread it around. There's going to be some articles in some magazines that are going overseas that they're going to see. There's no way that they cannot see them. Also, I think it's important to note that there was a lot of unrest when Katrina happened with the Louisiana National Guard and Reserve. The problems that occurred then were almost to the extent of being of resisting to serve over there. I mean, there were almost I wouldn't say, obviously not a coup, but the term that they use when they are revolting. I can't remember what it is right now.
They call it a mutiny.
Mutiny, yeah, thank you. But there was almost a mutiny. In fact, the troops said basically, you know, we're going back. We've got to get back. And there were a lot of problems as a result of that,
These were National Guard troops from Louisiana whose families, were losing their homes, their lives were in danger, and they're halfway around the world. They didn't join the National Guard to fight an aggressive war in Iraq. They joined the National Guard to defend America. But the trouble is we've got troops still stationed in Germany. They've been there for 60 years. We're occupying Germany after the Second World War. We still have troops stationed and occupying Japan and in Korea. And we have troops in 130 nations throughout the world. That's why to defend our empire, we've got to use the National Guard and take the troops that should have been available to help the people in Louisiana and Mississippi and send them over to fight and die in Iraq in a totally unnecessary conflict. Because, of course, we would not be having the problems we do had not Paul Bremer, representing our administration, dissolved the Iraqi army, dissolved the Iraqi police force, dissolved the Iraqi civil service, created a state of chaos, and then, oh, shucks, we got chaos. Guess we're going to have to stay here indefinitely.
You know, if I could move from the beyond treason issue and the military to another treason issue, if you will, I'd like to address a couple of major news things that have just happened. Do you have the time for that?
We got about a minute to 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, quickly. I had somebody do some research and found out that there was an article, a research that was done on Houston, saying that Houston would get hit by a Category 5 hurricane with a 20-foot storm surge. Now, this is posted at thepowerhour.com, but I will tell you that it says models show massive devastation in Houston. Are you ready for the date? February 20th of 2005. Now, this is very scary because this hurricane just went from a tropical storm to a Category 4 in no time whatsoever, and they've already said it is going to hit Houston. Now, I would encourage people to go to the Power Hour News Service, check out that story called Models Show Massive Devastation in Houston. Another thing, two British soldiers were just caught in Arab gear, Arab uniforms and equipment, bombing cars and they were acting as insurgents. Have you heard about this story?
Yes, I have. In fact, the Iraqis were so furious that they were actually setting Molotov cocktails on the British tanks there in Basra.
That's right.
And in other words, what they were doing was using their own troops to incite violence, pretending that they were, of course, insurgents. They really weren't. They were British troops carrying out a special order to perpetuate the chaos and violence. Hey, we're out of time, Joyce. Let's get that telephone number out one more time.
All righty. To get the DVD, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. And I had dinner with Charlotte Iserby, and she said to send her love.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Hang on, Joyce. We've got 3 more minutes to go. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening is Joyce Riley, and we're talking about this DVD. It's called Beyond Treason. We sat enthralled one evening, my wife and myself, and the photography is great. This is done in the manner that all of our documentaries should be done, but they very, very seldom are. The gentleman who put that together for you really did a great job, Joyce.
William Lewis is a genius. He is incredible. He understands what's going on in this world, and he has the creative ability to bring it out. He did 9/11 in plain sight with Dave, and then he put his efforts into this. And his heart was in it also, and I just am so grateful to have him, and especially the idea of putting the CD-ROM there for people to be able to print out all the documents themselves and have them. I think that really makes a difference.
And this is a separate CD. In other words, you get the two, you get the DVD and I guess the CD. But you need to actually see this material. You need to understand that the government has been experimenting on American troops for a long period of time with callous indifference to their suffering and callous indifference to their death. And until you understand really what we're up against organized evil. We have wonderful people in America. We have dedicated patriots. And some of them have come forward to try to tell the American people what's going on. And, of course, they're demonized and ridiculed, and everything is done to criticize them for daring to tell the American people the truth. But Joyce, not being in the military, has done a magnificent job, and I really want to congratulate you on that. It's fascinating. How long is the DVD itself?
Oh, I can't remember. I think it's 85 minutes, right. Total of 100 with the all the add-on footage with it. But it is something that if I could get in the hands of every person joining the military, I would feel so good about that. Because it, to me, that is where the education is needed right now. And, you know, these troops that are coming back that are saying, wow, I had no idea. These troops coming back right now, Dr. Stan, are, you know, were just children when the first Gulf War occurred. It's hard to believe that, but they were. Some of them, were only 4 years old. It's amazing to think that that happened, and no wonder they don't know about it. So that's why we thought all the Vietnam veterans were crazy also, that were saying that they came back with something wrong with them, and we wanted to deny that. So to every troop out there, every person that joined the military for the right reasons, we salute you. And I want to say don't give up, and I want to say please continue on, and please keep this fight going, because we are making some headway, and the Department of Defense is not happy about this documentary, I can assure you.
Well, I think it's important that we need people to defend America. But they need to be here in the United States defending America, not halfway around the world, fighting an aggressive war that, of course, was fought because Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, which we had given him. Ladies and gentlemen, there's something wrong with the scenario. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed. If you can enjoy a program like this with Joyce Riley, she's done a wonderful job. Her DVD, Beyond Treason, we recommend to you. We think it's a powerful, powerful presentation of what's going on. And remember, this is not that we should not be defending America, but our battle is being fought with ideas and with the truth. This will not be won or lost in Iraq. It'll be lost, won or lost here in America, determining whether enough people really care to check the facts and find out if what Joyce is saying is true. You can go up on the internet and go to to the websites, Trap Rock Peace website. Trap Rock Peace website has great information on depleted uranium. You can go to the Royal Society in Great Britain and pull down their sections on depleted uranium. I did this before I stuck my neck out and said, I believe there's a problem. And after studying this, I have no question at all. The problem is real, and it involves not only the depleted uranium, but the vaccinations, the experimental vaccines that have been used on our boys. And some of these have contained mycoplasma, and some of these have contained squalene, which is an adjuvant that you put in vaccines. Only it's so deadly that no other country will use it, but they put it in our vaccines. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book Vaccine A and our four-tape set that talks about Vaccine A. My interviews with Gary Matsumoto, who had written a magnificent book on this subject of the experimental vaccine used on American troops. Have you heard about that experimental vaccine? Of course, you're not going to, because our media is controlled by five mega corporations, and that is Bertelsmann, Disney, Fox, Viacom, and Time Warner, and it's covered in a wonderful book written by Professor Ben Bekdakian of the University of California. The book is called The New Media Monopoly. The New Media Monopoly. So we would ask you to try to find out what the truth is. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, it basically is an article that was written by a Major General Smedley Butler. And it's called War is a Racket. It was written in 1935 by the most highly decorated Marine officer at that time. He had 2 Congressional Medals of Honor. I hope you'll read his article. We'd be glad to send it to you. Of course, if you have the Internet, you can go up on the Internet and pull it down. That's the September Radio Liberty newsletter. But if you have, pardon me, that's the October Radio Liberty newsletter. But if you don't have access to the Internet, we'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of our August newsletter. Just ask for War is a Racket. It's what he wrote in 1935 after fighting in a dozen military campaigns. So we ask you, of course, to go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can listen to our radio programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet and not get much accomplished, but you get a lot of knowledge. You can listen to us on the shortwave, and you can get the frequencies there, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll get you those frequencies, shortwave, and then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And till we're with you again, may the Lord be with you. There's a graveyard near the White House where the unknown soldier lies, and the flowers there are sprinkled with the tears from mother's eyes. I stood there not so long ago with roses for the brave, and suddenly I heard a voice speak from out the grave. I am the unknown soldier, the spirit voice began, and I think I have the right to ask some questions, man to man. Are my buddies taken care of? Was the victory so sweet as that big reward you offered selling pencils on the street? Did they really win the freedom they battled to achieve? Do they still respect the Croix de Guerre above the empty sleeve? Does the golden store in the window mean anything at all? I wonder how my old girl feels when she hears a bugle call. If you'd like the rest of that, give us a call. We'll get it for you. here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we're going to ask you to hold your calls this evening, unless we specifically ask for them, because we have with us Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute. And Jerry has certainly worked in the genetic engineering. She's an expert on this. And she has a company where they actually grow genetically pure seeds that, you know, that sort of thing that you're not going to get today, because there has been so much genetic engineering and cross-pollinization, and the old-time seeds that were used for so many years that produce good, healthy food are just not readily available. Well, why is this important today? Well, I think we're seeing crises of all sorts, and the great tragedy is most Americans are totally incapable of being self-sufficient. We are totally dependent upon what we can buy at the grocery store, what we can certainly buy at the drugstore. We've never given a thought to what would happen if suddenly the grocery store and the drugstore and Kmart and Walmart weren't there. And yet, of course, we've seen recently what happened in New Orleans, and suddenly the lives of these people, almost 1.5 million people, disrupted simply with a couple of days. And with that as the background, Jerry, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
It's always a pleasure, Stan.
Well, why don't you pick up and tell us what your concerns are? Because there are many reasons for concern today, even far greater than what had happened in New Orleans.
Absolutely far greater. As a matter of fact, you know that I've been writing about global food supply issues internationally for several years, since 1995, actually, and I've been very concerned about trends that I see in the food supply situation around the world. And the reality is we now have developing, as far as I can tell you, a perfect storm that when you assess it, you realize, my gosh, the potential for U.S. famine, for global famine, is so very real that I am going to ask all your listeners today to please take seriously the need to learn how to feed themselves and their families, to take care of food and water supplies for their families, and I'll give you those factors that are converging right at this moment to threaten the food supply globally. You mentioned New Orleans. You're absolutely correct. New Orleans is a situation where you see, or in Mississippi too, where Hurricane Katrina came through, and we found out rather starkly that none of our governments, local, state, or federal, even with all the resources and the tax monies and so on they have, none of them were able to prevent people from starving to death and from dying for lack of water, and that is a tragedy. And it's almost criminal, as far as I'm concerned, that this has happened in a country that has so much food and so on. Well, we know that our government's not going to be able to take care of us in the case of a natural catastrophe. But there are more things happening down there than meet the eye, and things are beginning to trickle out. For example, we now have such a shortage of refrigerated trucks here in this nation because of the call for refrigerated trucks to be used as morgues and so on, that the South is having trouble getting food. In other southern states, there are food supply issues already, distribution issues, because of the trucking shortage, because so many supplies are going to the Gulf, and so much refrigeration truck is needed for other needs in the Gulf.
And then, of course, what we've got is the tremendous increase in the price of diesel fuel, which, of course, is having a profound impact on the trucking industry and certainly on the farming industry. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two here with Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute. All right, Jerry, let's go ahead and cover these things. You're talking about the perfect storm that's coming together, because we're seeing there's certainly the problems that are there, in New Orleans. And then, of course, we find that a major storm is descending on Houston, Texas, on the Texas coastline. What's going to happen in the next few days, we don't know, but there certainly is the possibility of major disaster there as well.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you already touched on my next point, and that is that with the destruction of so many oil rigs in the Gulf with Katrina, we have already lost a great proportion of our national oil supply, and we have now kind of propped up the stock market and propped up the confidence in the U.S., in the citizens of the U.S. by borrowing oil from all over the world and taking all kinds of supplies and once again creating even further dependency on the world for our oil supplies. And we have to point out that agriculture, modern agriculture, including all the genetically modified seeds that produce all the foods that we have, all of that agriculture is 100% oil dependent. There is not a part of our agriculture that doesn't require massive use of oil. Now we have Hurricane Rita entering the Gulf and shooting toward Houston and Galveston area, where there are the largest refinery is in the Galveston area, and where we have oil rigs all over in that region now. What is the likelihood that we're going to get continual oil supplies from other countries if, in fact, we find ourselves in even more need for oil after this hurricane comes through? This is only a temporary fix, a band-aid that we have right now on the oil situation in the Gulf. They're talking about releasing, strategic oil reserves. That really is misleading, unfortunately, because it's the refinery capacity that is our choke point here in this country.
And we haven't built a new refinery here for 20 or more years, and that didn't happen just by accident, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, right. I mean, it's not in my backyard. If you or I were asked to put a refinery in our backyards, we'd say, no, not in my backyard, and nobody wants them, and they're dirty and so on. But we've allowed ourselves to also increase the amount of fuel that we use here in this country without conscience, and unfortunately put ourselves in the case, in the situation of total dependency. Now, when you look at the fact that agriculture and every aspect of it, from I wrote an article, you'll find it on our website, called Oil to Fork, literally, from oil, from...
Hold that thought right there, sure. Jerry. We'll be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and she's talking about the fact that agriculture is totally dependent upon oil. Did you realize that fertilizers dependent upon oil? There's oil we use in our fertilizers. There's oil used in our farm vehicles. There's oil that is used in so many of the chemicals that are used in the agricultural industry. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. In pesticides, herbicides, diesel, in all of the plastics used to do genetic engineering and genetic modification of seeds and foods. Nobody realizes, most people don't realize that there's so much plastic used in these kinds of scientific techniques there are. And unfortunately, these are becoming more and more expensive and more unavailable as oil diminishes in supply. So we have that part of the perfect storm. We have the oil shortages caused by Katrina. We have the oil shortages that may be caused now by Rita. We have our normal over-dependency on foreign oil, and we now are in Iraq not for anything else but really for oil, to gain our peace, that last grab for diminishing supplies of global oil over in Iraq. And all of this, of course, leads right back not only to your SUVs, but right to your plate, because without it, you don't eat, plain and simple. So there is that part of the perfect storm surrounding the food supply issues. The other part of the perfect storm is the fact that the Port of New Orleans actually ships over 60% of U.S. grain supplies that come down the Mississippi and so on, ship them, not only export them, but also provide the monies for local economies and the southern state economies as a result of those shipments. So we have that part of the perfect storm. Then in addition, we have, and you and I have talked hours about this, Stan, before, the fact that we are now genetically modifying our seeds to the point, and these are multinational companies, many of them housed in the United States, that originate in the United States. There is a grab for all of the genetic material, God-given genetic material of all of the seeds, and to try to make those proprietary seeds by putting in individual genes, genetically modifying them for specific purposes. And this is all cloaked in the excuse that by genetically modifying the seeds, you're going to have greater productivity, you're going to have greater disease protection, drought resistance, and all of this. This is all well and good. We used to do this with hybridization. But now what we do is we place genes in them that will prevent people from being able to grow these seeds themselves and prevent farmers from being able to grow them themselves, save them themselves to grow next year and to feed people without going back to the pharma companies, the chemical companies, the seed engineering companies to get seed for the following year's crops.
Yeah, no, but basically you're talking about the terminator seeds that cannot be germinated. You have to get a new crop of seeds every year. Not only that, but they're putting certainly things into the seeds that can be used as insecticides, and they will kill the caterpillars.
Well,
what do they do to the human beings? They put things in there so that the crops can resist Roundup, a very, very deadly spray. But what do the things that they put into the corn and this and the other products so that they can tolerate the Roundup? And that's canola and soy and corn and cotton, and, of course, cottonseed oil. What does that do to human beings? Well, they don't want you to ask that, but the studies are frightening, and we know what's happened to some of the animals that have eaten these foods. There are no long-term studies on the American people. They are experimenting on us, and I fear, really, I fear for my country when I reflect that, you know, God is just, and is this how he's going to bring his judgment on us? There is no protection at all from the FDA because you have government officials who are simply bought off by the drug companies and bought off by Monsanto and the other companies that create these genetically engineered seeds. Would that be a fair statement, Jerry?
Oh, I think that's a pretty good summary, actually, of all that seems to be going on. You know, you have a revolving door in the Food and Drug Administration and EPA between these companies that do the same thing. When they stop working for government, they go and rotate out to these companies and get nice positions and fat salaries and benefits and so on. And then when they're looking for somebody to work in government, they take them from these companies. They take them from Calgene and all of these other companies, Monsanto and so on, and they give them very high positions in the U.S. government agencies. And when you have the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which used to be for the small farmer, for producing food for the U.S. consumer, unfortunately what has happened is that has turned into an arm of corporate America. And you've got the USDA, which has funded the research on the terminator gene technology in collusion with a private industry. And so you've got Terminator, which for those who are not familiar with it, it's a gene technology that is generic, can be placed in any plant, and what it causes is the embryo of the seed dies just at maturation so that the seed cannot germinate. This is literally halting the God-given ability for a seed to germinate and reproduce itself. This pollen can spread, the seed can spread out into the environment, and unfortunately it halts that seed to plant cycle, which is in fact the very fundamental basis for life on this planet. And unfortunately, this thing is going to be commercialized. It's already in the process of being commercialized. It's already being tested in various parts of the world out in the field, and even the United Nations has come down resoundingly against it, and we have done everything as a nation to quash those concerns and to beat these people into submission. And you'll find an article I wrote in 1998 that really went global. It's up on our website again, ARC ARKinstitute.com. Go to the food supply updates. Look at June 1998. You'll find that original article. Look at all the articles I wrote afterwards. And you'll see this isn't baloney. I've got the patent numbers there, the whole thing. You're going to see that we have created seeds in the name of the U.S. government. We own this patent. We, the people, own this patent. And others that have come after it. And we are also in collusion with other companies that have made chemical junkies out of plants, requiring the plants be fed chemicals from these companies in order to continue their growth. There are companies now around the world that are producing seeds that require you to feed a specific chemical to a plant 3 and 4 times a season in order to let it grow a normal growth. They have even found ways to disable the normal disease resistance in a plant, making it puny and weak unless you spray a chemical trigger on the plant. In other words, disabling again the God-given ability of a plant to fight plant diseases. They found a way to cut that off and put it under genetic control because they got tired, frankly, of suing people and sending detectives out into fields, and they said, geez, we now have the ability to genetically program these plants to do our investigative work for us. All we have to do is make it impossible for farmers to save their own seed. And we have actually, under Paul Bremer III, suggested that the Iraqi constitution include, I think it was order number 81 or 51, I think it's 81, order number 81, that the Iraqi constitution should include an order that made it impossible for their farmers to grow their own seeds anymore. They want them to bring in these so-called higher productivity, higher producing seeds for their people.
Isn't it wonderful? We brought freedom to the people over in Iraq, and we're going to tell them, you know, how they're going to grow their food, and the women are going to be far worse off than they were, you know, under Saddam Hussein. Under Saddam Hussein, you were not under Sharia law, whereas, of course, the new constitution that's been written will put the women under Sharia law and deprive them of any rights at all in a society dominated by men. That's, of course, what the Muslim religion is about, and that's what we brought in the way of freedom to Iraq.
Right.
Let me just comment that over in Europe, the people do not want genetically engineered food.
Right.
And over there, at least in the past, it has been required that they would have to put on the food packages if there was genetically engineered food or food products. This is not allowed in the United States. Other countries allow the people to know what they're eating here in the United States, where we have a free society, and you produce a food that is not genetically engineered, you're not allowed to put that on the product,
right,
on the label. And you have to ask yourself why. If there's nothing to conceal, why don't they want the American people to know?
Mm-hmm.
If they're getting experimental, genetically produced food that has never been proven any long-term use on human beings, and we see increasing rates of heart disease, of asthma, of diabetes, of cancer in America, government has no idea why it's happening, but they assure us that it could not be any of the things we're talking about tonight.
Oh, right. Well, the official position of the United States is, and this is the word they use, these genetically modified seeds and foods are essentially the same. The emphasis is on the word essentially the same. So you put in a foreign gene into the genome or the genetics of a particular, let's say, a carrot. You put in a foreign gene, and it's in every single cell of that carrot. And you eat this, and that foreign gene may have come from a rat. It may have come from another plant. It may have come from a bacterium. In the case of Bacillus thuringiensis, which is a bacterium that produces a natural, harmless insecticide out in the environment, they decided, well, geez, let's put that gene in every single cell of a plant. It'll kill every caterpillar that eats it, so corn will now grow. But in the meantime, that same gene is being ingested by us every time we eat an ear of corn or wheat or whatever.
And what are the scientific studies that show it's safe? And well, they're very, very questionable. We don't have time to get into that. That's another subject. And
uh-huh.
We've got a 4-tape set on genetic engineering and a book on the Seeds of Deception, you want to go to Jerry Guidetti's website and get her information. She's got tremendous amounts of information on genetic engineering, and you better know what they're doing to you and your family. Okay, Jerry, pick the story up from there.
Well, so we have, again, we have the oil situation in Katrina. We have Rita on the way. We have the oil to fork complete dependency. We have troubles now getting trucks to ship food throughout the South, not just in the Gulf states, but we have a trucking shortage and a food shortage problem or distribution problem occurring in this nation that is receiving so far very little press, and you're going to hear a lot more about it. We have genetically modified seed, which has been a growing problem in its own right, and we have people who are buying seed in packets commercially from the store that are hybridized, that have killer genes in them that prevent them from being grown after this year's planting. So how many gardeners out there are sitting with packets of seeds, hybrids and so on, that cannot be depended upon after this planting to produce seed for you for next year? Well, now we're looking at massive ecological destruction down in the Gulf states, farmlands lost, seed production interfered with, and so on. And I would have to ask folks to consider the prospect, be it this tragedy or further tragedies to come, more natural disasters to come, what would happen if the seed crops being produced right now, being harvested right now, this year for next year's food, what would happen if they don't get dried, the seeds? If you don't have enough oil, you don't have enough electricity to do the drying, what happens if we don't get them shipped? What happens if they die in the field or we don't have enough pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, etc., to process those seeds so that they get shipped to the stores? If indeed all of these things happen, again, the perfect storm, as it appears they are, how are you going to feed yourself in the next few years? We unfortunately sit back, and we depend on food. In this just-in-time society, we think that behind those grocery shelves are endless rivers of trucks delivering food. Not so. We have max 2 to 3 days supplies in a store, and by day 2 and 3, you're looking at jars of mustard and ketchup on the shelf. All your basics are disappearing by day 1, and we see this down. Take a look at the situation in New Orleans. Take a look at the Northridge quake. Everybody's saying, how can I get food? Well, electricity went down. Credit cards were useless. Store owners couldn't run checkout scanners and so on. And you're looking at a situation where, okay, there's no food here. All right, so you go back home. Now what do you do? If you don't have the ability to feed yourself, and I'm going to talk about the other greatest issue, the most imminent danger facing us right now, but if you don't have the ability to feed yourself, short-term, intermediate term, and long-term, for at least a year to 2 years, you've got yourself a major problem. And if you don't believe me, turn on the news and watch the retakes of, or the reruns of Katrina. Take that and multiply it times 1,000. This is scientists talking here. And these are words by other scientists who are talking about the most imminent threat facing us right now today on this globe.
Hold that thought right there, Jerry.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti from the Ark Institute, which actually provides seeds for families so that you can actually grow your own foodstuffs and all sorts of foods, but they're the heirloom of seeds. Those have been around for a long time. They're not genetically engineered. They produce, of course, the sort of healthy food we used to have before the Monsanto and the other mega corporations came in and began to introduce the genetically modified seeds. But, of course, they contain all sorts of genetic material that has a profound impact on the human body. But, of course, we're not told about that, and we're not even allowed to know that, because the people in government are so smart that they know what we should know and what we shouldn't. In other countries, people are allowed to know if they're eating genetically modified food, but the laws have been passed here, bureaucratic laws that say the American people will not know, they will not be allowed to know. In Europe, they can know. In Asia, they can know. But in America, we can't know. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure.
You're talking about there are other things that are coming down the line,
right,
besides things we've already talked about.
Right. And let me add to what you just said, Stan, that most importantly, the heirloom seeds, the original seeds, before they were genetically modified and hybridized, were the so-called non-hybrids or open-pollinated, the way nature intended for them to be, so that you can take a pepper and you can save the seeds from that pepper and you can plant peppers next year. You can take a tomato and scrape out the seeds and you can plant tomatoes next year. And your investment would be one seed creates a tomato plant and you might have tens of thousands of seeds from that one tomato plant. This is how nature intended for humans to live. Enabled them to take care of themselves year after year by having seed-producing plants. And that's how the whole ecology of the Earth works. Unfortunately, we have not only hybridized, which presents its own problems. We can do that on another program, but we have also genetically engineered. So the thing about our heirloom seeds and any open-pollinated seeds is that you can grow your own food and take care of yourself. Now, coming down the pike, the most imminent threat to the global food supply is the avian influenza or bird flu that you're currently hearing about in bits and pieces on the media. It's getting more national attention. I understand Public Broadcasting Tonight is doing it on Bill Moyer's program. I do hope they get the latest information. For those who have not been following the story, avian influenza is endemic in Southeast Asia. It's in China, it's in Kazakhstan, it is now spread through Siberia, through Russia, over to the Ural Mountains. It's at the edge of the Caspian Sea. It appears that yesterday a whole shipment of birds positive for this avian influenza, the worst strain, H5N1, a very lethal mutation in it. It looks like those birds were imported into Kuwait. Kuwait has agreed and has admitted that a shipment has come in.
Now, I think it's important for people to know that we're talking about a disease of birds right at the present time. It has spread into human beings,
and
where it's very lethal, but there are only maybe 55, 60 people have died so far. However, the fear is that this will mutate so that it can infect human beings. In birds, certain birds, of course, are quite resistant to it. Other birds, it simply decimates the flocks, depends upon the type of birds, and they've actually killed over 100 million birds trying to stop it in Asia. So, because they're trying to keep it, keep it from spreading among the birds there, especially among the chickens and ducks and other things. But the fear is, of course, that it will spread into human beings. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, and that is a large part of the story. In fact, several strains have arisen now due to mutations. They mutate very, very rapidly. And we have one particular strain that was at Qinghai Lake in China. And unfortunately, this mutation humanized it, made it more possible to infect humans. What we're looking at now is small clusters of avian influenza in human beings where it has gone from human to human. No bird was involved in the transmission. Now, that would be technically a pandemic level 3, or level 3 pre-pandemic, rather, where you have small clusters isolated from each other, human to human. We are seeing changes in the sequence, the RNA sequences in that virus, that are making it more possible for it to be transmitted from human to human. And developments in Jakarta, Indonesia, this week are startling, and when we come back, I will tell you what those developments are.
All right, fine. And, of course, now the birds have been migrating, and, of course, they migrated into Russia, and they were actually shooting the birds there and into Europe. But we're going to find out in just a moment what's happening in Jakarta and Indonesia in this unfolding saga. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment with Sherry Guidetti of the Ark Institute. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Jerry, go ahead and tell us what is going on in Jakarta in Indonesia.
Sure. In Jakarta, Indonesia, we had about a month ago, we had in a middle-class neighborhood an accountant who worked for the government. His two little daughters got sick, and it appears the 8-year-old got sick. Then the dad got sick, then the 1-year-old got sick, and all of them died, all three of them died. They all had bird flu.
H5N1
bird flu, correct.
Okay, fine.
And they had no exposure that they could see to any birds. Okay? Now, the closest bird cage in the community was, in this subdivision, was across the street. There was a bird cage in a house across the street. They checked the feces in that cage, and the feces were positive for H5N1. Now, question, how did the H5N1 from the feces in a bird cage in a subdivision, middle class, upper middle class subdivision, get into one of the children and then co-infect dad and the other child, and they all died of this. All right, that was a big red flag. That's another, just like we have seen in Thailand and Vietnam, some human-to-human transmission in small clusters. A mother in Thailand holds her dying 10-year-old daughter in her arms for 10 hours. The mother catches the avian influenza. The mother dies. The aunt gets it from her sister. She dies. Another small cluster. Well, now we have in Jakarta this week a local zoo, the Ragunan Zoo in Indonesia, was closed down this week. First, we had 19 birds infected with H5N1. They died. We had one zoo employee ill with the flu. I believe he died. Then all of a sudden we have a vendor with a cart in the zoo become infected with bird flu. Then we had a second zoo worker infected with bird flu. Now today we have a fourth person. We had another woman in town, a 37-year-old died, but she lived close to a poultry slaughterhouse. We had an infant who lived above a poultry slaughterhouse died. Now estimates are we have today between 4 and 6 children who are now diagnosed with presumptive H5N1 bird flu, and there is no connection to chickens. Right now, there is this very silent panic going on in health officials around the world. Is this it? Is this?
Hold that thought.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and she's talking about the person-to-person outbreak of this disease in Indonesia, and she's cited about how many people there have died in Indonesia from person-to-person transmission. Do we have any idea, Jerry?
It's looking like there are 10 hospitalized. One of those babies is now in critical condition. One was admitted in critical condition. I think the others are holding on. What scientists are saying at the moment, virologists, is Jakarta is raising the Phase 5 flag. Have we now entered Phase 5 where we have broader transmission, human to human? When that final mutation comes, and it may indeed have already happened, it is only a matter of time, one jet plane away from so many other countries, for example, Australia, New Zealand, all over China. You know, folks have been in such a panic today, the experts, that they've been calculating the length of time for jet planes to reach various countries and what cities they're most likely going to and so on. Now, you know, Stan, that riding on a jet with recirculated air is taking your health in your hands every time you do it. I just came back from a trip, and everybody, I guess there were 6 or 7 people sneezing and coughing on the plane, and within 3 days I had a cold. And this is normal. Jet travel, unfortunately, today assures that whatever pandemic develops this century, it's going to go with rapid fire speed to the rest of the world. SARS took only 24 hours to get out of China into five countries. We are praying, the science community is praying, that Jakarta is not ground zero, that this has not already happened this week, that it's going to be efficiently spreading human to human, because we are not ready. We don't have any vaccine that is effective against this particular H5N1. We have a seed vaccine, one that is made against a Vietnam strain that must be given in 12 times the dose of a normal influenza vaccine in order to get an immune response. And so for the amount that we have in a flask at NIH, we only have enough really for 440,000 people, even if it was specific to the pandemic strain, and we don't know what that pandemic strain looks like yet. So the only, and I mean the only thing that they are hanging their hats on, is that we're going to have a year or more in order to prepare for this thing, in order to cut it short, because the H5N1 combination has not, and this is hemagglutinin number 5, neuraminidase number 1, the hemagglutinin is a protein spike that allows the virus to enter a cell. The neuraminidase is an enzyme protein that allows the viruses to bud out of the cell in order to infect others and the rest of the body and so on. That's the simplest way I can make it. Our bodies have never seen this combination. So what happens is it infects healthy people. And the healthier you are, the greater your immune response will likely be. And it releases these massive amounts of immunological cytokines, these molecules that help your immune response, your immune system work the way it's supposed to work. And it floods your tissues with tissue fluid and your lungs, with tissue fluid and blood in order to kill off the viruses. And unfortunately, if you average out the death rate, the fatality ratio, and all of the people infected so far, and we've got now, I think, 66 deaths, if you average it out, it's looking like a 55% death rate. Now, if you compare that with the 1918 pandemic, which we now know by doing state-by-state, country-by-country analysis, we now know that not 20 million were killed around the world. It was much closer to 100 million. I finally got that data yesterday. If you look at the globe at that time, we had 1.6 billion people on the earth. No global travel to speak of except by slow ship. Take those numbers, reverse them. Today we have 6.1 billion people on the earth. So the six people where one used to stand before. And we have global travel that takes us anywhere around the earth within an hour, 2 hours, 10 hours, so on. All right, now you take something with a 55% death rate compared to a 2.5 to 3% fatality rate in the 1918 pandemic, and you're looking at, God forbid, hundreds of millions to even as high as 1 billion or more people dying. And just this week, for example, the United Kingdom told its people that they were looking for 20,000 caskets to try to line them up, when in fact, privately, the scientists have admitted to us that they are looking for 200,000 caskets just for Great Britain. There, we don't have caskets, we don't have refrigerated trucks, they're expecting that as much as 50% of all public employees or greater employees for any companies and in any positions in the whole globe will be out of work. They will either be sick or they will be taking care of sick and dying at home because the hospitals will have closed after a few days. There are no supplies to take care of a catastrophe like this. So we're looking at Jakarta and we're saying, oh my gosh, let's pray that this isn't the one, that this has not made efficient human-to-human transmission, because if it has, it will make Katrina look like a day in the park. It, you cannot fathom the kinds of impact. Well, how does this relate to food supply? Well, do the dominoes thinking. If 50% of the people or more are ill, and the rest are home taking care of them, trying to keep them alive, then who is running the tractors? Who's planting the seed? Who's driving the trucks? Who is manufacturing fertilizers? Who's refining oil? Who is doing anything? And if you think this woman is a crazy woman saying all of these things, I would have to tell you that I have a lot of other crazy people thinking the same way. Dr. Michael Osterholm is one of the most respected epidemiologists in the world. He has been speaking out, sticking his professional neck out now for several months, trying to warn national leaders that they have to plan for this thing, that we have to search drastically for a vaccine that will work. We have to get antiviral compounds such as Tamiflu produced, but he also says he has nightmares at night. There is not going to be food. There is not going to be water because water plants won't be working at capacity. All of those things you and I take for granted because we are so dependent on infrastructure are now in jeopardy if this thing, H5N1 or something similar to it, goes pandemic. And in as much as I as a biologist don't even want to think about those kinds of scenarios, it keeps me awake at night. I cannot not think about it because it's staring me in the face. I'm looking at these numbers, looking at our dependencies, and looking at Katrina and saying, my God, when are our leaders going to wake up and realize? Well, President Bush finally got the message, probably because Osterholm, who works for Homeland Security, and also has the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at University of Minnesota. Osterholm, I'm sure, has been talking to our leaders and saying, you had better get on this thing. Well, Bush has now just made a national statement this week that they are going to lead an international group to try to stop this thing before it takes off. But most scientists will privately tell you that the thing is unstoppable. And I've just read yet another article, this is out of the British press, from a top virologist in that country saying, this is not stoppable. So what is this lady who's scaring you to death asking people to do? I'm asking folks to do as Osterholm and some other great thinkers are asking them to do, and that is, if you don't have a bunch of money, buy as much inexpensive food as you can to put into your home. Start storing water or get water filters that'll make it possible for you to do river water and so on, any other, even rain water, to purify for yourself in case your water systems go down. Dr. Osterholm, you should know this, that this doesn't come through as just one influenza wave. It comes through in usually 2 to 3 waves or more. It can last anywhere from 9 months to 3 years. You have to listen when folks say that you really have to be able to take care of yourself for a dirt minimum of 3 months. Okay. I would say a year.
Well, Jerry, let's get your website out.
Sure.
And let's get your place where people get in touch with the ARC Institute if they'd like to. Do you have a telephone number?
Yes, 1-800-255-1912. 1-800-255-1912. And you could ask us about how to get a self-reliance package or self-sufficiency package of heirloom seeds to take care of yourself after your food runs out that you've stored in your house. And how to share these with other people. How to take care of them, isolate your seed sowing and saving book and things like that that can help you to take care of yourself in the long term. In the short term, we suggest that you look at a water filter so that you can look at what happened in Katrina. Those people could have had water filters. They could have drunk the water that was in the streets there. In reality, they died of thirst. Children, babies died of thirst because there was no clean water. It was so contaminated. We have inexpensive water filters throughout this country that could be had, that people are water self-sufficient as well. Chlorine bleach. They should accumulate chlorine bleach for water purification. Go to our website, call us up, we'll tell you how to do this.
And I think that it's important that people begin thinking about, could this possibly happen? Now, we don't know what's going to happen, but if you're not prepared, like the people were in New Orleans, they really weren't prepared. Many of them weren't, and of course, many of them paid for that with their lives. The hospitals weren't prepared.
Yeah.
The hospitals had their generators down in the basement, where, of course, they were flooded out, and they knew the flood was coming. So why did they leave the generators in the basement? And as soon as the water came, the generators went out. There was no electricity to keep the respirators going, to keep the various things that they had to have, pacemakers, the other things, electronic pacemakers. And in one hospital, 45 people died simply because they didn't have food, they didn't have water, they didn't have electricity. And you would think that here in an area where they knew that there was a very real possibility of a major hurricane and a major flood, and they've been planning on it for years, and yet when it came, total chaos. So we're going to have to think about how we look after ourselves. And once again, Jerry's got a lot of great information there. And not only that, not only does she have a great deal of information on seeds, she's got a wonderful book about how you plant seeds and then how you save the seeds. So, did you write that book, Jerry?
That's not my book. I do have another several books that I've written, and those are up there on the website. If they go to the ARC Institute's website, and that's ARC as in Noah's Ark. We're a botanical Noah's Ark. That's what our institute's about, that and education. So it's ARC, A-R-K, Institute.com. And we would really recommend that people move rather rapidly if Jakarta is the thing, if it's starting this year, and I hope we have at least until wintertime before it hits the United States. Then folks have to really be planning, and they need to get themselves food in that they can open up and feed. And by the way, we'll also refer you to some basic fluids that you can produce to help people keep from getting dehydrated. You know, Stan, President Bush has already signed the executive order on April 1, allowing the government to forcibly or encourage voluntary quarantine. When this hits, we will be told to stay home. Hospitals will be closed within days. I think the last number I read is we have 405,000 mechanical ventilators in the entire United States. We will have need for millions of them, and we don't have them. So if you have this thing, just because this is not 1918 doesn't mean we're going to have any better outcome. As a matter of fact, at a conference yesterday, a video conference that featured Dr. Osterholm, he said, folks, this is 1918. Our technology does nothing when you're looking at the numbers here. And so folks have to get away from the feeling that they're going to just go to hospitals. The hospitals are going to be closed as they were in Toronto with SARS. They put signs up, do not use the emergency room. They closed up hospitals. I had a customer call me today and said that that shutters had been purchased for a medical group in North Carolina, and that it wasn't against hurricanes, it was because a pandemic was coming. Doctors are beginning to talk among themselves, and I checked that at another source, and they told me the same thing, that they had bought these shutters to shutter up the bottom floor of their clinic, because they knew they were going to have to keep the hordes out. They saw what happened in Katrina, and they were terrified this was going to happen here.
It was really so interesting that that the hospital, the Mercy Hospital, which is the major hospital there, the doctors had to barricade themselves in their own hospital because the gangs were there coming in for drugs. And what you have to understand is the gangs came in from Jackson, Mississippi, and three or four other areas to participate in the looting.
Yes.
You're not hearing that, of course, but these are the people. There were about 3,000 of them, and they all got away. They arrested a few local people, but the people from these gangs that came in from other areas, and, you know, they were trying to break into the hospital, And they did break into the hospital, right. But the doctors were able to barricade themselves with the drugs and with the sick patients, right. So that they could not be seized. You see, this couldn't happen in America. But that actually did happen within the last 2 weeks in New Orleans. Yeah. And where were the National Guard? Well, they just didn't get there on time. Where were the federal troops? Well, they just didn't get there on time. I mean, the president had signed an order, you know, saying that this was a national emergency on the 26th. The storm hit, as I remember, on the morning of the 29th, I think it was. And 2 days after that, they ordered the National Guard, and 3 days after that, why they got there. So how could you run such an emergency situation so poorly, unintentionally? We've got a real problem. The National Guard should have been there initially. They sent 100. They sent. Let's see. There were 500,000 people in New Orleans itself. 400,000 left. So you know, there's nobody there to guard their homes. The gangs are coming in. Where were the National Guard? They didn't get there for several days after the looting had begun. Why wouldn't you have the National Guard there beforehand, before the storm struck?
Right.
None of this really makes sense.
Right.
But if they're going to do such a good job, and to Katrina, where they've been planning on this for a decade or more, what are they going to do across America,
right. If
we have a real problem? We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up this program with Jerry Guidetti of the Arc Institute. Well, Jerry, we've got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Uh-huh. Well, once again, Stan, I see a perfect storm in terms of the food supply, not only around the world in poverty-stricken regions, but also here in this great, bountiful, well-fed United States. And I've noted all the different parts of that storm happening. The most imminent threat right now, I would say, are two things. First is avian influenza, or a global influenza pandemic, which happens every century and it decimates populations around the globe. We are more vulnerable today than we were in 1918 because of international travel. The other thing that so exacerbates it is we have a completely oil-dependent agriculture. Now our oil supplies are threatened, and we have a complete seed supply that is now not reliable to grow food for future years. Folks have to take seriously that they need to have seeds. If nothing else, it will be great barter. Somebody had said, Jerry, you know, the seeds are worth more than money. In fact, they are, because you can feed yourself with them. You're not going to be able to feed yourself with paper dollars, because there's nothing going to be there to buy. So we recommend that people take seriously making a very, very small investment in their own futures and get non-hybrid seeds and learn how to garden, grow some food this year, and plan a big garden on paper right now for this coming spring to be able to take care of yourself. In the meantime, 1-800-255-1912, and we will help you with that information.
And I'll get that telephone number out one more time.
Yes, it's 1-800-255-1912, and the website is ARK Institute.com, and look at the food supply updates to understand what's happening with the food supply, and please, please plan on getting water and food into your home to take care of yourself in a quarantine situation. You saw how it did not work in Katrina. It may not work in Rita. And as Dr. Stan just said, you can't depend on the National Guard to come and deliver your food and water for you. When there are no stores, there is no food, and there's no water and no electricity, what are you going to do? Don't forget to buy a good mechanical can opener if you buy those cans. Something that people don't think about.
Okay, well, we're out of time, Jerry.
Uh-huh.
God bless you. Thank you
God
so much for being with us. And our guest has been Jerry Guidetti. That's the ARC Institute, and that's the ArcInstitute.com. ARK, like Noah's Ark, right?
Yes, correct, Stan. Thank you.
Good night.
You.
God bless you.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night.
And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening has been Jerry Guidetti. And, of course, her telephone number, if you'd like to reach her, is 1-800-255-1912. That's 1-800-255-1912. And her website is thearkinstitute.com. That's just arkinstitute.com. And great information there that will help you begin making preparations. And, you know, if nothing happens, well, you've lost nothing. But if you do not make preparations, and I will tell you that we are in for some very difficult problems, and whether it's going to be the H5N1 influenza, it's going to be something else, I can't tell you. But I'm very, very concerned. I'm very concerned because the establishment, which has, of course, created all sorts of terrible new diseases through a genetic engineering process, he keeps telling us we're going to have a worldwide avian flu epidemic. What do they know that you and I don't? We put together a wonderful pamphlet called Genetic Engineering Population Control. Four of my newsletters are all up on the website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. The pamphlet, however, we certainly think is well worthwhile, called Genetic Engineering Population Control, and it tells about all the new diseases that have been created in biological laboratories in recent years. An amazing story that you're not going to hear elsewhere. And if you'd like to go to our website at www.radioliberty.com, that's www.radioliberty.com, while you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, directly or indirectly. And then after that, if you have more time, why, you can go to our archive programs and listen there until you finally get so tired you can't stand any more of this. But you need to become aware of the fact that we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Why would anybody want to create genetically altered food with Terminator genes in it, genetically altered food which is harmful to animals, and the animal studies that could show that it could be do serious harm to human beings, and we're not allowed to know about what's in the food that we're eating? Why would that happen? Unless you understand that there is an agenda out there. And we hope you'll go to my website of radioliberty.com and look at our material on the population control agenda. And you can pull that down and copy it. It's a monograph I wrote. It's up there free of charge. If you'd like to get one of our newsletters, if you'd like to understand what Major General Smedley Butler wrote back in 1935, after participating in 10 to 12 American campaigns throughout the world, and certainly the most highly decorated Marine general at that time in 1935, beloved by the American people and his troops. Call us at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for a copy of the August newsletter, and we've reproduced Major General Smedley Butler's essay on war as a racket. That's the August newsletter, 1-800-544-8927. We want you to get it. We want you to read it. And then we try to put what he said into perspective. And then understand that there are dark spiritual forces in the world. They're not imaginary. They're real. And we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. And Bertrand Russell wrote, "I don't pretend that birth control is the only way in which population can be kept from increasing. There are others. War has hitherto been disappointing in this respect, but perhaps bacteriological war may prove more effective. If a black death could be spread throughout the world once in every generation, survivors could procreate freely without making the world too full." That comes from page 103-104 of Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, published in 1953. If you'd like those pages, give us a call. We'll be glad to send them to you. You need to understand, there truly are evil people in the world today.